I just realized that like not a lot of people were talking about stuff, right? And I felt like it must just be me. I'm doing this wrong. I'm the crazy one. And I wasn't. And the other thing that struck me was like, I love a good before and after story. I love it, right? When you see like, oh, everything's so dark and gloomy before, and then after everything's so beautiful and shiny. But nobody talks about the journey in the middle, which is messy, which is hard, which is scary, which is terrifying, which is funny, which is humbling. Like, and that's the piece that was missing.
You are listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. This is where women in midlife come for inspiration, motivation, and sometimes a little education to help them flourish after 40. Don't forget to hit that subscribe or follow button. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Midlife with Courage. I am Kim Benoy, and I'm so happy to have you all here. I'm also very happy to have my guest here with me today. Her name is Angela Burke. Welcome to the podcast, Angela.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah, I cannot wait to talk to you. Why don't you just introduce yourself, tell the listeners what you would like them to know about you?
I'm Angela. I am based in California, but I actually split my time between California and Australia, which is where my fiance lives. So together, we have a staggering number of children. We have seven, and I have
Wow.
three boys myself. And I spent 30 years as a high-tech B2B marketer. I retired in December of 24, and then in April of 25, got this crazy idea to write a book. And that's what I did. So I spent last year writing my book, Real Girl's Guide to Midlife, and I published that in December. And really, what's kind of funny is that the book is actually an idea that I had 20 years ago. I was 35 and had two of my three boys at that point, sort of going through a crossroads in my marriage. At work, my identity was starting to change a little bit. My appearance was starting to change. And unbeknownst to me at that time, even my hormones were changing. And I had all these questions because I was looking around and I was like, you know, everybody seems to have everything together. So it's got to just be me. I'm the crazy one. I must be doing this wrong. And I put these ideas into a red folder. It was, remember those old folders, the actual like paper folders. And the folder literally and figuratively got buried. And so when I retired, I had a little small pile on my desk and I was cleaning it out and I found the folder, is basically what happened. And then I opened up the folder and I was like, well, turns out a lot of the same questions that I had or the same feelings that I was feeling then were still present. And I had a whole host of new ones. So that's what prompted me to write this book.
I love it. And I've read part of the book. I just admitted I'm not totally through it yet, but I love it. It is so funny.
Oh, thank
You
you.
just take the real life stuff that we're going through and put it out there. And there's experts in there too. We can talk more about that, but let's go back to you, to your story. Tell us, I always ask my guests to tell us about a time when you felt the most courageous or you showed courage.
There's probably two times in my life where I think back to number one is when I ended a marriage. And this was something that happened. It was, a very calm and non-dramatic ending to a marriage that both my ex-husband and I sort of came to this place. And we weren't as happy as I think we wanted to be. And why I felt that took courage was I seemingly, if you look on the outside, I sort of had, I thought, a very idyllic life. And I was so desperate to try to give my three boys the kind of intact family that I didn't have, right? My parents divorced and I held on to that. I really white knuckled that. And what I realized was I was so focused on giving them that I wasn't giving them a happy Angela. And I don't even think that they knew me. I didn't know myself, if I'm honest with you. So that took, and not just courage on my part, but also courage on my ex-husband's part to be bold enough and brave enough to put our happiness first and to be very, very focused and diligent on making the transition smooth for my kids, our kids. So, and I think it was probably the first time in my adult life where I actually felt like I put my needs on the top of the list. So, looking back, I would say that would be one time. And then the other time really was writing this book, right? Because here I was in my mid-50s. I had just retired from a career, found the folder, And then I did spend the first couple of months. So I found the folder in December of 24, and I didn't start writing the book until April of 25 because I needed those few months to just settle. And I asked myself silly questions like, should I do this? Can I do it? Who am I to think, this is even possible? And I can tell you that those questions lasted such little time. Whereas if I go back to my 20s and my 30s and my 40s, I would have agonized over those things and convinced myself not to do it because these stories that were floating around in my head, some of which I concocted, some of which others concocted about me, would have just lived there. And they would have been the thing that directed my action. So I give myself a lot of props for, short-circuiting that process and moving very quickly from who am I to think I can do this to why the hell not? I'm going to do this. And so that felt very courageous to me. Never written, didn't know how to write a book, didn't know what it took to get a book published, which I ended up self-publishing. And I just figured it out.
Just
So
figured it
those,
out.
just figured it out. And I started. And I think that's the other thing, right? Like, if I look back at that time, I think sometimes when I felt the least courage, I in my mind sort of thought I had to have everything lined up. I had to have the perfect plan and have a scenario and a mitigation plan baked for every possible outcome versus just starting and trusting myself.
Yes, that is so huge. There's so many themes there that you just talked about. I'm kind of like you. I would prepare and I'd write out and plan. Just do it. Just take the action because something will happen. Either it'll work or it won't. And if it doesn't, it's not the end of the world.
That's
You know?
right. That's right.
So I love that. But another theme that almost universally, all my guests, when you're talking about your boys and ending your marriage and putting yourself first, that it's kind of a version of filling your own cup before you can take care of everyone else. That's my number one theme of all the people that I talk to on this podcast.
It's so true. And, as I was writing the book, and I heard it from so many women that I talked to who graciously shared their stories for the book, as well as the experts. And you kind of start to wonder, like, why are we, particularly as women, I maybe men feel the same way, I don't know, but certainly as women, what are the reasons why that becomes such a hard thing to do? Like, I can think it, but then when push comes to shove and I have to actually act, and I think a lot of it has to do with it's very layered. And it's very different for each of us. But for me, and for a lot of the women that I talk to in the book, it is the fact that it is modeled for us. And in some ways, I can say for me, all the stories that I told myself about myself and others told about me were rooted in this idea that my purpose was to kind of keep everybody comfortable. I needed to be small and I needed to be steady and I needed to be the source of peace and comfort and security for everybody else. And that was probably for me rooted in childhood a lot. And then it just carried into this mindset. And then it started to weave together these stories that I told myself that I wasn't enough, that I didn't deserve to be happy. Somehow I was wrong for wanting more. I was wrong for wanting to be happy. I was wrong for desiring things that maybe would make other people uncomfortable. And it's so hard to unwind that, but it's so real. Like that power, that grip is so real for so many of us women.
Yeah. And once you let go of it, oh my goodness.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I am so excited about my new venture in this podcast. I'm calling it Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. You are going to get me, Kim Benoit, once or twice a month. I'm going to be getting real with you about the conversations that I have with my guests. And I'm going a little bit deeper. I'm going to bring my own personal experiences into it. I'm going to share what I've got going on in the hopes that you will share right back with me. This is not going to be me just talking in front of the microphone. I want your input. I want your participation. If you go to my show notes at the end of this episode, you'll see a support the show. That is where you can subscribe to Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. For only $5 a month, you're going to get this extra bonus content once, twice a month, and we're going to talk about what's really happening in midlife. I'm going to share my experiences. I'm going to get real. I'll probably get a little vulnerable. I'll be sharing things I don't normally share. So please subscribe so that you can get in on the founding members of this new Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. I'll see you there.
Oh. And you, yeah, it's so true. And it's like, I think even that, you know, as layered as these things are, the unraveling, the untangling of these things is also layered, but it is so powerful and it's freeing. And it actually, for me, in a lot of ways, it explained why I was so tired. Like, you know, if you just think about it, like I was exhausted all the time, like take that alone. Yeah. And I think what's also hard is if you think about, you know, what we women go through in our 30s and 40s and 50s and beyond, you know, it's not single threaded, right? You don't get to look at that and go, oh, I'm just dealing with career stuff, or, oh, I'm just dealing, you know, if I'm a mom, I'm just dealing with kid stuff, or, oh, I'm just dealing with relationship stuff. It's all these things happening at one time, layering on hormones. The cake just keeps getting taller and taller.
Yes.
And it's no wonder why we're so tired all the time.
No kidding. I think maybe it was my last podcast guest. We were talking about all the different things we have going on, the kids, the parents that are aging, and then you add the perimenopause on top of it. And what the heck?
It explains so much.
Yes. Yes.
So it is very liberating. It's very freeing. And it's also, what's the opposite of being exhausted?
Energized?
Energized. Yes. And it's like, I think the other reality was, for me in particular, and again, for the women I interviewed for the book, it's like all the parts of us that we spend decades editing or softening or pretending aren't there, we're all of a sudden reclaiming. And that feels good. And like, I start to recognize myself in my own life, and that feels energizing and exhilarating and safe, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. It does feel safe. You left your marriage, you divorced, and you have another man across the world.
I do.
I want to talk about how that all works too, but I really, what we were just talking about with how you come into yourself and you're more energized. Did that happen before you met him?
I think it happened kind of at the same time, right? Like if I think about, somebody had asked me, you know, so far, so I'm in my mid 50s, what's been your hardest decade? And each decade has been a challenge for different reasons, but I think my 40s were the hardest years in a lot of ways. And I think what happened was the realization that I wanted for myself and also to model for my boys a different kind of relationship and a different kind of partnership and a different kind of love meant that I had to put myself first, right? And so that was an eye-opener. It also gave me the opportunity to spend time with myself and learn things about myself that I never, ever realized. And that it was, if I look back at that time, it's actually a little sad, but also I'm grateful for it because it allowed me to open up a part of myself and discover parts of me that I didn't even know existed. It also, it made me realize I had probably a strength that I didn't even know I had never tapped before. And I think it was the combination of those things, you know, making an actual change in my relationship status, focusing on what that meant for me as a single mom and how I needed to show up for my kids, which wasn't always great because the backdrop of all this in my 40s was I didn't know how close I was to menopause. So I actually entered menopause at the end of my 47th year. And I didn't know how bad the run-up was. And in my book, I write these letters to my boys because, you know, at times when I think in during that phase when they needed stability, I probably wasn't giving them that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what was happening to me. But all that is to say, what that allowed me to do though was sort of move away from this like playbook of what I thought my life needed to look like. Yeah, I grieved it. It changed. I found myself in scary waters, but for the first time, I realized I have this, like I could trust myself. And it allowed me to look at my life and go, there is no playbook. There's nobody grading me to tell me if I'm doing it right. I just have to do what feels good to me and be open. And that's really what prompted and allowed me to find this relationship, which is totally on paper wacky. but it was all these things kind of happening at one time, if that makes sense.
Sure. Sure. I think the universe or God just kind of makes things happen for us, and we just need to go with it sometimes.
You sometimes need to go with it, and you sometimes need to like quiet the noise and sort of like see what's happening, understand how you're feeling about it, put a name to how you're feeling about it, and then take these even small steps, very, very small steps towards something different.
You mentioned that you found places that you were stronger than you thought you were. Can you give us some examples of
I
that?
mean, I think the big one was, this idea that I could forge a really great life for myself not being married. And I can do that for myself and my boys. And yeah, the end of a marriage is a grief. And I imagined a life for myself and it was super scary. I was thinking about the decades to follow and what was that going to look like and how was that going to feel and what was I going to do? And yet I did it. I knew that I was strong enough because I had proven that. I'd proven that in my 20s. I proved that in my 30s. I knew I was strong enough, but there were times where I just didn't feel it. So I kind of let myself feel the grief. I let myself accept the fact that different and a change wasn't a failure. It was just different. And change doesn't have to be bad, it's just different. And yet, my happiness and the things that I wanted and the things that I felt I deserved were even more important than everything else that maybe I had fought for.
I love that. I do a courage and confidence circle, and we talk about change and the fear of it. We're so afraid of it. But you're right. I love it. I love it. It's just different.
It's just different and
It's
it
just
doesn't,
different.
and different and change don't necessarily mean failures. But I think what happens is, I write about this in the book. I write about grief, and grief can come in a lot of ways, right? Grief is, can come when you lose somebody that you love. When a circumstance changes, when something that you want so desperately is not something that you can attain, grief comes in a lot. You can grieve friendships, you can grieve marriages, you can grieve yourself, identity shifts, you can grieve all these things. And I think what happens and what I heard echoed from the women and even the experts that I talked to, because look, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a life coach, I'm just a girl trying to figure this stuff out. But there's often a lot of guilt and shame that comes with grief, that comes with change. And you have to move past that. You have to name it and sort of accept it and move past it, but you can move past it. And for me, a lot of it was just that mindset shift that change is not bad. It doesn't mean a failure. I look at my marriage as an example. I don't see that as a failure at all. I also don't see the process that we went through to divorce as a failure at all. Did it feel like it sometimes? Sure. Was it sad on the days after the divorce when my kids were with their dad and I'd come home to an empty house? Absolutely. Was it terrifying? For sure. But it was just different. I had to lose the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment and find this different place. But it is hard, and those things are real.
It's so hard. But once you get there, like I said before, it's amazing. And I feel like we're on this path and we see what's ahead. It's kind of up there and like, oh, keep going, keep going. Oh, we're going to st step back. Oh, I don't feel right about, nope, just keep going. I love that you wrote this book to really help other women go along that journey in a humorous and informational way.
It is very humorous. It's very vulnerable. I get real about a lot of things. And I think the thing that was also striking to me is if I go back to when I had this book idea at 35, and then I fast forward to my mid-50s when it like resurfaced for me, I just realized that like not a lot of people were talking about stuff, right? And I felt like it must just be me. I'm doing this wrong. I'm the crazy one. And I wasn't. And the other thing that struck me was like, I love a good before and after story. I love it, right? When you see like, oh, everything's so dark and gloomy before, and then after everything's so beautiful and shiny. But nobody talks about the journey in the middle, which is messy, which is hard, which is scary, which is terrifying, which is funny, which is humbling. Like, and that's the piece that was missing. And the other thing that I felt was missing too was right now, midlife and women and menopause, everything's having a moment, and I love it. Love, love, love it. Because we're finally having conversations that for decades, nobody had. So that's good. However, I love that Halle Berry's out there talking and writing. I love that Naomi Watts has written a book. Like, I love it. But I'm not those women, like, I'm just a mom. You're trying to,
Not just a
show.
mom.
I am a mom,
Thank you.
and I am a mom, and a just a real girl trying to figure it out. And that was kind of the other piece that I felt was missing. It was harder to connect to some of these other voices because that's not my life. I literally show up to the desk wearing jammies and UGG boots, like, this is what we're rocking today. And that was the other piece that was missing for me.
It's real for a real
Yeah.
person, real
Yeah.
people. And speaking of real, we have to talk about these perimenopause symptoms.
Oh,
One of the
yes.
things that really I can relate to is the rage feeling. It honestly, the first time I felt it, like it really scared me.
Oh yeah.
It's a scary thing.
Well, it's a scary thing. And if I go back to like my ragiest periods, which was in my 40s, and so coincidentally, right? So back if I go back then, I don't even think, if I'm honest with you, that I even understood the word perimenopause, right? Like when I was in my 20s and 30s, I'm 19 years younger than my mom. I remember my mom and my grandma talking about the change. I'm using air quotes. Like that's the way it was talked about. And I don't even think I understood the word perimenopause until I was probably through it, to be frank. But if I look back at my ragiest times, I was working a really high pressure job and I was working a lot. My marriage was ending. I was grappling with the fear and uncertainty of, forging a new life that looked very different than the life that I had been living for 15 years. I was fearful about that. I'm setting up, life as a single mom and, trying to keep my kids stable and steady. I was exhausted and I had all these hormone things happening. And right when it was at its worst, I didn't realize how close I was to menopause. I knew that my cycles were changing, but I didn't know that within 2 years of the peak, my periods would end. I didn't know that. And so I would feel like this rage happening, and it wasn't like a light bulb. I just felt like there were this growing just impatience. I was annoyed. I was impatient. I was exhausted. And it just came out in, it came out in a lot of ways. And I'm not proud of it. And I did one of my earliest blogs. So in writing the book, I also started a blog. I wrote about the rage years, and it was kind of an apology tour, like to all the people who had to see me at my worst. But it was, and like I'm not proud of that, but it was what was happening for me.
It was real. I take a supplement to help with all the perimenopause stuff, and I can tell when I forgot to take it. And my husband's sitting there, and I'm like, oh,
No, I mean,
I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's just.
it isn't. I mean, there is a little bit of humor I can get now, kind of when some of the worst of it is in the rearview mirror. It's not to say I don't get raging now, because I think I'm on what I lovingly call like my wave three of menopause, because I was really under this impression, very erroneously, that when you stop your period, this magic 12-month period where you get no cycle, which seems very arbitrary, but again, I'm not a scientist or a doctor. You end that. I really thought, like, okay, you turn in your card, like, whew, the worst is over. I'm done. Thank you very much. Survived. And that has not been my experience. It has been a series of additional symptoms that have come,
Oh,
and
interesting.
things that resurfaced, that made their reappearance, and then new ones,
Oh, great.
even into my mid 50s. So you're welcome, I guess. I'm not sure how to, And
Great.
maybe, yeah. And so I do, there are still periods now where I feel a little bit ragey. But I at least now I can name it. Like I know what's happening. I'm like, oh, okay, it's gotta be like, ooh. Like I start to see the symptoms. But when it was at its worst, like, it would sort of happen. And then I'd like take a step back and go, man, I can't believe that just happened. And so in the book, I write these letters to my boys.
I love those.
And I was talking to my oldest son about one of the incidents that just has stayed with me, and he's 23. He's like, I kind of remember that dinner ish. I remember you were really mad when we got home, but really what I remember is the long drive that we took on the beach before we even got to the restaurant. So it's like he had a memory of that where I remember just how brutal and how terribly I felt I showed up. And he remembers like other parts of that same dinner. So it's like, huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he didn't give me a full pass, but I felt like he gave me a little
Yeah,
pass.
well, that was nice.
It was nice.
That was nice of
Yeah.
him. So you have a fiance in Australia. How does that work? Because you're not living together, you're living
Yeah.
opposite sides of the world.
Yeah. Well, I'll go back to the start. And how this all started was we met, and about 3 or 4 months after we met and we both decided we liked each other, he said to me, "Hey, I don't know how this is going to work." And unlike me, in every part of my life, for my entire life, I uttered words that went like this: "I don't think we need to have all the answers. Let's just see where this goes." That is not the way I live my life whatsoever. I needed all the answers, and I never liked to see where things just went. So that was kind of the start of it. But how it works is we spend time together. One of us will travel for various periods of time at a time, and then we spend time apart. We both have kids who are teenagers, so our youngest are 15. So we do see a path toward us being together more and maybe traveling between the countries together more. But I did a funny Q&A blog with him on my Substack. And one of the last questions that I asked him was basically like, "What do you think the key to our relationship is?" And he answered, it was a very lovely answer. And then, I think added like, "Also live in different countries." Because there is something about, having time apart
Oh, yeah.
that is super magical. And you know what's funny about that is now that I've written the book and I've had the opportunity to talk to so many women and I've connected with them even on the blog, I am hearing more and more about relationships, especially at women in this age, that look all kind of similar to mine. Like maybe their partners don't live 8,000 miles apart, but we, like, "Hey, we don't live in the same house." Or, "Hey, we have a small apartment together, but we each inhabit different places as well." Or, "Hey, we travel between homes together, but then like we're apart for a month." So, like, it's kind of like this idea that there is no right answer here. And at this age, we've earned the right to not have a right answer. So, I could have easily been like, "There's nothing about this that looks like a playbook. I am not even remotely going to consider this relationship." And I would have missed something really, really amazing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've heard of this. A friend of mine told me about this not too long ago, just like weeks ago, about together living apart.
Okay. So is there, because like I've
It's a
heard for,
thing.
it is a thing. Okay. Because I was hoping it was going to be like nesting. I hear that. Like when sometimes when people divorce, what they'll do if they have small kids in particular, like that they'll have one place where the kids are. And then the parents kind of go in and out, right? So like they're nesting. So the kids are in the nest and the parents sort of,
They move.
they move.
They move. I love that.
So, okay. So yeah, I was hoping that this thing had a name because I want to read more about it.
Yeah, I do too. I'm like interested almost. No.
I do too.
Yeah, they know a couple that they have two different places. The woman lives in one city and the husband lives in the next city over, and it works great. And so like they actually went out with them as a couple and they started in one house and went to the other
And
house.
then flip to the other one. I love it.
I'm
Yeah.
just
Okay. I'm going
saying.
to read up on this.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. I've been married for almost 38 years, and after he retired, after a few weeks of being together, it's time for him to go up north to his deer shack and ice fish or whatever, you know.
Well, and I think like one of the other things that I think is happening to a lot of us in this phase, and the theme that sort of surfaces in the book is there's no right way to do life. The things that make us happy, the things that fulfill us, whether that's wanting space, wanting more, having different desires, like whatever it is, those things have to come first. And we're not wrong for wanting more. Like the idea that we're wrong for wanting more is silly. But it is so real.
Wherever it came from, we need to stop.
We do need to stop.
We're
I
not
agree.
wrong for wanting more. I love
You're
that.
not, yeah, you're just not wrong for wanting more.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I just love the book. Like I said, I'm not all the way through it yet, but you just get very real about everything, the symptoms and the sex and
Oh yeah,
everything.
all of it.
I mean, that was amazing too to me. Like,
Well, and I think the thing that was surprising to me was, and again, I kind of have a perspective now that I'm kind of through it, but how did I get to my 40s and not understand my relationship with pleasure. How did I get to my mid-40s and not have a very clear sense of how I derive pleasure? But that's where I was. And, you know, there's a lot of funny stories, and there's a chapter in the book, and I have two warnings in this chapter. Because again, together, my partner and I have a staggering number of children. We have seven children, and they range in age from 30 down to 15. So we've got the spectrum. Two
Sure.
girls, five boys. Okay, so
Wow.
this kind of stuff, I would say not everybody is comfortable with.
Yep.
So in this chapter, I have these warnings for the kids, like, hey, you might want to close the book, whatever you need to do right now. And then at the end, it's like, well, if you stuck it out, you're welcome. Because I'm not sorry,
No.
because all of these things make up whole beings. Like,
Right.
so if my kids need to see me as a whole person, that means you see me at my best, my worst. You see me through the lens of my desire, through the lens of my fears, like whatever. This is me. And you can kind of like it or lump it. And so I do get very honest about it, but it was, I guess, you know, it's like you said, it's divine timing, but you know, in building the book, it was comforting to know, 'cause you know, as I'm writing the book, I was like, I must be the only one who in her 40s had so many self-discoveries. And I was comforted in the fact that I was not the only one. But how sad is that? Like, I look back at that time and I feel bad for me, that version of me
Yeah.
in my 20s and 30s, I guess. It's like, wow, I just kind of was asleep there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or
Yeah.
I didn't think I deserved it. And I didn't even think to want it. Like, I didn't even think that it was possible to want more.
Yeah. That is so sad.
It is so sad,
That's why we need to
but
make up for it now.
we do need to make up for it now. And it was, you know, somebody had asked me, you know, there's a lot of myths that I think that we need to retire. One is that we are enough. I always was enough. I still am enough. And our pleasure, our desires, our wants, our needs, don't be shameful for wanting those things to come first on the list. Like, that is not something to be ashamed of. That is not something to diminish. And
Yeah.
I think I know I've spent a lot of my decades feeling like that was just not possible. And it made me like a bad person. So yeah, I do get very real about
Yeah.
some of these things.
Yes, I love it. I love it.
Oh, good.
I think it's amazing. Okay, the name of the book is Real Girl's Guide to Midlife.
That's right.
And where
Real
can
Girl's
we
Guide.
find that?
You can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, wherever you love books. I have a website, realgirlsguide.com. And also I write for Substack, which is realgirlsguidetomidlife.com. And I try to write about three pieces a week, and it's been fun.
Yeah, I love it. But before we say goodbye, is there
Yeah.
any one last piece of advice or message you want to leave with our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I think the last piece of advice I'd say, I end the book with something called the manifesto. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, where do I start? Right. And, you know, one of the best places to start is sitting with yourself and looking for the signs and signals that maybe you're living too far on the edges of your own life. You know, are you finding yourself saying yes to things you want to say no to? Are you saying no, but it's followed by a dissertation about why? Which was something that I really have embraced. No is a full sentence.
Yes.
I'm not available. That's three words. It is so amazing. And turns out the world doesn't open up and swallow me. If I say no to something, everything's fine.
It's okay.
It's okay. But you know, what I write about in the manifesto is this idea that, you know, change doesn't have to be this big, like you don't have to blow up your life. But maybe start with this idea of naming one thing you want to let go of. For me, it was saying no. Just the ability, like saying yes to things I didn't want to do, and one thing I wanted to reclaim. And writing that down, writing those two things down, and saying them out loud to myself. That's all. That's all it takes to make a mindset shift. And so I would just say, you don't have to have a perfect plan. You don't have to blow up your life, but think about it. What is one thing you want to let go of and one thing you want to reclaim? And say it to yourself. And that's, you know, start at the start.
Oh, such an easy step
I think so. It's and
yeah.
like really practice saying no. Like even just this week, if you're like me and you find saying no to be difficult, or it's followed by this big long paragraph, this week just pick one thing that you're going to say no to. And what you're going to say is, I'm not available. And end it.
And that's it.
And see how it feels. And I promise you, it's going to feel really good. It's going to feel really good.
Just thinking about it makes me feel good.
I don't you like even I'm a lot better at saying no or asking for rest. I need a break. That's four words. I don't agree. There's three words. Like they don't take a lot, but I love I'm not available. It's my favorite.
Yeah, I love that too. I'm going to use that a little bit more often than I have, I
Then
think.
you have
I'm
it.
not
Yeah.
available.
I'm not available.
Wonderful. Oh, Angela, thank you so much. You have so many great messages to share. Please, listeners, grab her book. You are going to love it. And thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. If you liked what you heard, I would love it if you would leave a review. Or even better, send a link of this episode to a friend. Until next time, take care of your beautiful self. Feels like I'm flying.